atop Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Excited to be with you. Brian Kilmeade Show coming your way. A lot going on. Got a president overseas, another president, former president who wants to be the next president. He's going to be in Washington, D.C. And we're also watching all the events that are happening at the G7, where President Biden is, as well as off our coast, where we see Russia has sent a big naval armada over to visit that collapsing country. But we are shadowing them. A lot going on. In a matter of moments, Congressman Rich McCormick will be with us out of Georgia. He's on Armed Services. Katrina Campins will be here from Fox Business. And we'll be taking your calls. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
You don't think President Biden has any responsibility for the fact that terrorists are being allowed into this country?
The fact that they were identified and detained and we know where they are is them doing their job.
Really? You're okay with this? Terror fears rise as the broken border has served as a welcome mat for our enemies over the last 3.5 years. Are the worries warranted? I say yes.
Number two.
Do you plan to confront any of the bad blood between the two of you or any of the issues you had, including over January 6th?
I've said earlier this year, I support him. He's been earned the nomination by the voters all across the country. And, of course, I'll be at the meeting.
I bet you they talk. 2024, Mitch McConnell talking about meeting with Donald Trump on Capitol Hill. The former president looking to sow up support from his party in the House and the Senate. Will Trump and McConnell bury the hatchet? I say yes. We'll talk to one of the people at that meetings in a matter of moments.
Number one.
We have already imposed sanctions on PRC entities. Today we are doing more. But, of course, we're not only focused on China. We're focused on the broad network of entities and individuals working to try to circumvent sanctions and get these inputs to Russia.
Yeah, where have they been? Since they offer the sanctions, they don't clamp down on those people circumventing the sanctions. G7 about to begin. We talk about the critical agenda to combat the rise of China and Russia and a plan for a massive boost for Ukraine. But almost all those political leaders are in trouble, except for Meloni, the head of Italy, who did have her party do quite well in the elections. Congressman Rich McCormick joins us now. Congressman, welcome back.
I'm keeping on. Oh, hey.
Yeah.
McCormick, how are you?
Congressman, you can hear me?
I can. I'm sorry. We're at a conference.
No problem.
President Trump is about to show up and speak to us. And we're at the Capitol Hill Club right now. It's an exciting time.
No, I love it. And by the way, let me know what's going on there, too, if these people are coming in. Can you give me an idea? Are people excited to see the former president?
Oh, heck yeah. This is a big November. We got to turn the country around. We're going to get back to Senate. We're going to keep the Congress and hopefully expand our lead. We'll actually be able to get some things done for at least a couple of years, and we got to be locked and talked, ready to go.
I mean, we know how hard it's going to be to hold on to that slim advantage over in the House. In the Senate, this is a one shot over the next two terms where you have a chance to take control of the Senate. Is the president going to ask, from what you know, is he going to be asking how he can help you guys as well?
I think so. I think it's one team, one fight mentality to go into this. Having a unified message, making sure we know that our borders are secure, making sure that the economy is looked after, making sure we lock down debt. There's educational opportunities. We have so many things to talk about, especially energy production and consumption, making sure that we're not overregulated, overtaxed, all the things that matter to Americans most that are going to win us this election in November. We're one team, one fight.
All right, so let's talk about what's happening in Ukraine. Zelensky and the president will have a joint press conference. What question would you like Zelensky to answer for you?
I'm just making sure that we're accountable on the funds, that we're supplying them with the weapons that they need, but that we're not spending on superfluous things, making sure that we're deadly. We're pushing back the adversaries that we would infringe upon Europe. I mean, this is why NATO exists in the first place. I know people have objections about NATO, but quite frankly, they're stepping up. Countries from all over NATO are really stepping up to the plate. Poland's doing more than anybody. Phenomenal efforts on their part in understanding their history and where they came from and their fear of Russia. They have real concerns, and I think that's, once again, something to shore up. Hopefully it goes well for us.
But the thing is, and Congressman, you got this military background. Why is it taking so long to get the $65 billion worth of weapons into theater?
Well, this is the problem with Biden all along. He slow rolls everything. It took forever to get the M1A1s over there to approve the weaponry to be attacked. Strategically and tactically important areas of Russia that they're trying to infringe upon, that they're attacking Ukraine with impunity from. Biden's policies on foreign policy, probably the worst foreign policy president we've ever had. He's not good on the economy either, but his foreign policy is horrid. How he treats Israel, what he's done with slow rolling on Ukraine, whether you like supporting Ukraine or not, is inconsequential to the tactics and strategy that you use if you're going to win that. If you want to lose it, then fine, then we shouldn't be there. But if you're going to win it, he's doing everything wrong.
I'm fully in support of Ukraine to do it the right way, though. But my thing, isn't it the Pentagon now? You guys got you guys gave them the money. Isn't it up to the Pentagon to execute the delivery of the money, of the weapons?
In a sense, yes. And they should be quickly getting it. And I was over when 10th Mountain was handed over, 101st. That was actually two units I served with when I was in the Marines. I was attached to Army forces. I watched the handover. They looked pretty efficient. So I think this is a hang up with the bureaucracy that's really hamstringing us. And I blame that. I lay that at the Secretary of Defense, Secretary of State, and President Biden's feet.
I would love you, Congressman, with your the knowledge that you have and the respect that you've gained, I'd love for you to use some influence to get this thing going. You know, it's hard enough to get the money and weapons over there in election season. It's a shame that they just sitting waiting there on pallets somewhere in America. But let's move forward and talk about what's happening with in Gaza. It looks like these Hamas-Israeli talks have fallen apart. So now it's going to be up to the Israelis to finish the job. What percentage of people serving in Congress understand that that Israel has to wipe out Hamas?
Well, I think it's important to realize that Israel has a job to do. There's always going to be collateral damage. They want to minimize the innocents. But I tell you, war, we forget how bad war is. In World War II, 100,000 civilians, innocent civilians, died in Tokyo in one night because of firebombing that we did on purpose. War is always going to have its casualties. We should try to minimize that, especially in the modern day of warfare, especially when you're on the world stage and you're being judged constantly. But when you're taking out bad guys that use shields, human shields, to conceal their tactical advantages, there's always going to be that collateral damage. And that's just an unfortunate part of war. But if we don't do something, they will continue to have unfettered access to Israel in very nefarious ways. You saw what happened. That came out of nowhere. You did not have settlements in Gaza. People forget there was relative peace. So those terrorists picked this fight.
Everybody knows you're a medical doctor. We watched you confront Anthony Fauci. Here's what happened last week. Cut 32.
You believed an institutional should make it hard for people to live their lives so they'd feel pressured to get vaccinated. Could we run the audio clip on that, please?
You think can be done about it? I have to say that I don't see a big solution other than some sort of mandatory vaccination.
You want to come to this college, buddy? You're going to get vaccinated.
Yeah.
Big corporations like Amazon and Facebook and all of those others are going to say, you want to work for us, you get vaccinated. And it's been proven that when you make it difficult for people in their lives, they lose their ideological and they get vaccinated.
Why was it important to roll that audio clip from that audiobook of Anthony Fauci?
It showed his hypocrisy. He said it was taken out of context. No, it wasn't. He very much made it very difficult for anybody who wanted to travel, get education, go to business, do anything. You had to get a vaccination. That's just strong-arming the public. I tell you, Americans are not good at being told what to do by the government. Our whole principle of the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, was that the government should never be so powerful that they determine our future. And if we learn one thing from COVID, more than any other thing, is that government incredibly overreaches when it feels like there's necessity. They will build in that fear, and he was Dr. Fear. He was somebody who made sure that if you didn't get this vaccination, you were going to die. And there was no exceptions, by the way. There's no medical exceptions, no scientific exceptions. And I take great offense to that, because as a medical doctor who treated patients during COVID as an ER doc, the entire time I was censored, my license was threatened, all over information I was sharing that turned out to be true. And they like, well, we didn't know if it was true or not. Then why are you censoring me? Shame on you. These guys took away our First Amendment. They shut down our businesses. They shut down our schools. They shut down our travel. The government should never be that powerful, and that's one thing we need to learn from this.
Yeah, I know you got to run because President Trump's going to be there shortly. Last question. Did anything change? You exposed him, but if people were listening in 2 o'clock in the afternoon when you were talking or 11 o'clock in the morning, they were informed. But for those people who think that Anthony Fauci walks on water and those people that disagreed with him were just wrong, what should they know?
Well, they should know that, first of all, if we're not careful, the government will use any excuse they can, including climate change, which is a absolute farce, by the way. Not that there's any climate change, but that it's caused by carbon emissions. You can do the science another show, but they will use any excuse possible to tax and spend you and regulate you to death, to take control of your life, just like all these other Marxist countries around the world. We have to be very, very aware. We need to hold accountable Fauci and other folks like Marenz, Kaback, and all those guys to make sure that this never happens again. And we need to be aware as a society that our government, I don't care if it's Republicans or Democrats, should never be more powerful than us. And we got to be on guard against that.
Do you take an IVF vote today?
I think so. It's going to be an interesting day of voting. And
where do you stand?
Well, you know, specifically on which part of it?
Are you for IVF or are you for banning it?
You know, I think it's kind of a silly debate because I think we're picking fights right now that we don't need to pick. The world's on fire. You got countries being invaded. You got Taiwan being threatened. You got Israel at war. You got Ukraine at war. We have a national debt of $35 trillion, and we're talking about IVF. I think it's kind of, you know, as a doctor, I think it's something we haven't worried about in 40 years, and all of a sudden we're worried about it. It's kind of weird.
It's bizarre, but it was brought up because of what happened in Alabama, and then all of a sudden Democrats see it as an issue to go along with abortion. So you're going to be asked to vote on it. To me, of course you should allow IVF. Just get out of the way. Allow for it. That's what science has brought. Happiness to a lot of parents out there. And you meet people every day that are IVF babies. To me, nobody wants to go backwards. I don't know how you feel.
I'm not against IVF at all. It's weird, the whole storage issue. That, like you said, I'm not sure what – I guess they're worried about the destroyed fertilized eggs, and that's the issue at hand. But I don't know what this bill has in those particulars. I'm going to be briefed on it later today. I'm certainly for IVF as a medical doctor. There's nothing immoral about it, nothing bad about it. The question is, how do you take care of the thousands or maybe hundreds of tens of thousands of fertilized eggs? You know, do you keep them in cryo forever? I don't know. That's something that maybe regulators should stay out of, and we'll let each state handle it instead of getting involved, once again, overreaching the federal government power.
All right. He's on Armed Services, Foreign Affairs Committee, and Senate Select Subcommittee on the Coronavirus. And he's going to be meeting, along with others, other Republicans, with the former president of the United States in moments. Congressman Richard McCormick, thank you.
Always a pleasure, bro.
All right. 1-866-408-7669. So we're following a bunch of different things. Something else happened at 1:30 in the morning in New York. In Queens, New York, they pulled over a guy that had in his car a full police uniform, a reflector vest to show that you could maybe work on the subways. They had a mask that he had, and he was armed to the teeth. Armed to the teeth. They found him because his license was obscured. Excuse me, his license plate was obscured. And when that happened, the cops just said, let me just pull this guy over and find out what he's up to. And that's what they find in his car. I'm not sure if this relates to the upgrade of terrorist activity in our country, but I know this. When you pull over somebody with all types of weapons in their car in the middle of the night, heading in Queens, New York, where we have 67,000, at least maybe up to 81,000 illegal aliens that we're housing and sheltering, many of which are up to no good, I'm concerned. I'll bring you the latest on that and what's happening on our border in just a moment. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
I'm Guy Benson. Join me weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and guests. Listen live on the Fox News app or get the free podcast at GuyBensonShow.com.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
We all saw Joe Biden arrive this morning in Italy. It's embarrassing, and it's harmful to America's interests. When world leaders see a president who is infirm and weak, shuffling around the stage, not knowing where he's supposed to go, they know that they can take advantage of America. And that's not just our adversaries, our allies as well.
That was Senator Tom Cotton today talking about what the president looks like on the world stage. And he does not look sure of himself. He took yesterday off. I guess when he travels, he needs a day to recalibrate. But it's him. He chose to go back in between for his son's trial or to speak at the Juneteenth event. I'm not sure what he was doing, fundraising. But if a guy's 81 years old and looks 91, why would you fly him back and forth from the meetings for D-Day over to the G7? So you did that. He did it anyway. He has another day off instead of talking to other world leaders. It's to our benefit to have small talk as well as big talk. And now they're in a series of meetings. The president looked clueless today. He looked like he was out of sorts. He does not know where to walk. And everyone picks up on it. That's what Tom Cotton is talking about at the G7. But think about this. In the world, you know, I know we're not the biggest European show, but if you just look at what happened with these last elections, Prime Minister Sunak is 3 weeks away from an election. He looks like he's going to get routed and be out of office. Emmanuel Macron from France, he's calling for a snap election after his party was decimated in the elections that took place that went way to the right. Olaf Scholz of Germany, his Social Democratic Party was humbled. So now he has lost some additional power. Even the Prime Minister of Japan faces some rising unrest with his Liberal Democratic Party, and Mihei will lose his job come the fall. The person that is most secure is Meloni, who ran way to the right and is running in Italy and is not being politically correct, is not going with this green environmental first attitude that hurts their country's energy as well as their lifestyle, not going for the political correctness, is not for the whole transgenderism, is not going for this DEI stuff. And that's why the people of Italy, with all their problems and all their challenges, are pleased to get out from underneath this stuff. And also, they are upset about illegal immigration in their country. Does that sound familiar? Also, there's dueling fundraisers for both presidential candidates. Now, in London, Brexit firebrand Nigel Farage was having a big event for a Trump event for to raise money and awareness for Trump. And then you have Anna Wintour hosted the Biden meeting over in London. Same day, same time. She's editor-in-chief of Vogue magazine. I just love the way everything's trending away from all this DEI stuff, ESG stuff. Corporate America's fed up with it. People are voting away from it. Shareholders want to focus on profits again, not on political correctness. The environment, yes, you should be responsible, but no, you should not be sacrificing and pretending like we're a third world nation because somebody like Al Gore wants to profit off the panic of global warming. So next, we'll look at 2024. And right now, I think this is a very important day for the former president. He's going to address 200 CEOs, some of the most powerful in the country. He's going to let them know his vision, and he's going to listen to find out what they want. The thing that's made them very open to Donald Trump is the policies of Joe Biden. And I'm going to be very curious to see. There's certain people that will never get along with Trump and vice versa. Mitt Romney's one. Senator Lisa Murkowski's the other. Larry Hogan, if he gets in there. But Mitch McConnell is very practical. I know he never knew Trump before, was working with him on judges and other things, tax cuts. Like work with him. After January 6th, he broke with him. He's upset with Elaine Chao and the way he was... The former president was talking about his wife. They might both be over it. Could there be a mini truce? I don't know how much it matters being he's not in leadership. Katrina Campitz next on housing and the economy in just a moment.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
The median projection in the SEP for total PCE inflation is 2.6% this year, 2.3% next year, and 2.0% in 2026. My colleagues and I are acutely aware that high inflation imposes significant hardship as it erodes purchasing power, especially for those least able to meet the higher costs of essentials like food, housing, and transportation.
There is the chairman of the Fed talking about what's going on and what the concerns are as everyone looks for some type of interest rate cut to really jolt and maybe get unfreeze the housing market. Katrina Campins is all over this. She's with Fox Business, Fox News, real estate contributor, and host of Mansion Global on Fox Nation. There's always new episodes on that. Katrina, welcome. Welcome back, I should
say. Thanks for having me.
So you're this morning all set on Fox and Friends.
Yes.
It's hard to imagine an issue that's more important but not spoken enough about than housing in America. What's the big challenge with it right now?
There's so many challenges, right? Inflation, as you mentioned, the cost of actually purchasing a home is so much more expensive, right, simply because we don't have enough supply, but also because of interest rates. So, and between 2021 and now, home prices have appreciated 33.9%. And mortgage rates have gone up. What was the number this morning? It was like 300 and something percent. So, you know, there's definitely alternatives and there's definitely things that you can do to still purchase a home, which I definitely encourage because I still believe that purchasing a home is the best way to build generational wealth. I'm a firm believer in that.
But right now you see that mortgage rates are actually up now 152%. It's so significant because most people who are thinking about moving in a traditional sense, barring an emergency, have 3% mortgage rates.
Right.
So if you're saying to yourself, I need a bigger house. Well, you know, I want to scale down. Why move now?
Why?
It's impossible to rationalize it. And I want to get my first home. I finally have the money. Well, why move now? There's very little on the market. You're going to have to overpay. So things are frozen right now.
They are. And I've been doing real estate now for 2 decades, not to age myself, but this is some of the weirdest times in real estate, right? Because it is frozen. It's not a buyer's market. It's not a seller's market. Sellers can't sell. They can't be potential buyers. You know, so there's just a lot of frustration in the market. And it's definitely something that's really, you know, affecting the American people because housing is taking up such a large percentage of their income, right? And income's not increasing as quickly as housing prices, not to mention property taxes, insurance, that's another, and maintenance.
Right. They say on the average of year in New York City is going to cost you $18,000 a year just on maintenance to keep up. So that's pretty incredible. Some other stats that I think are important that people are going to say to themselves, I'm not nuts. The gas is up 45%. So how you heat your house, your utility bills taking a bite out of your maybe excess income, it's no longer there. Households' energy overall is up 30%. The other thing I hear is a sleeper story is these major corporations buying up housing, not mansions like the ones you cover on Fox Nation.
Right.
But they'll take middle class housing, suburbia. They'll take an open area or rebuild homes. And you think, well, that's a positive. Well, not really. These are more and more homes that are not going to be accessible to the average American family.
And this has been happening for quite some time and it's been very controversial.
And
right?
You said builders love it.
Builders love it. Investors love it because they're buying up homes and they know people can't afford to buy. So what are they doing? A lot of builders are building to rent. Basically, they're creating these communities. They realize, okay, people want to stay in the same school district. They want community. And they're staying a lot longer renting. So they're building these communities. Instead of selling them, they're renting them. And they're creating really a revenue source. But the issue is that, yes, there's a lot of pros, but people really are being affected because they can't purchase, especially first-time home buyers. You know, it's just there's so much competition now to be a first-time home buyer, not to mention 20% down.
I mean, how do you compete with BlackRock?
Like, you
I mean,
can't.
You can't. So don't you think – do you think that government regulation might be in play here? I mean, don't you think you have to stick up for the American family at this point?
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the main things that needs to change are policies, you know, because obviously if the opportunity is there, builders are going to invest in it. They see the need. They see the demand. Right. And so are institutional investors. And so at some point, something needs to happen so that the American people are given an opportunity to really purchase their home. Because I know millennials think that it's all about freedom, freedom, freedom. And some people, you know, want to continue to rent. But still, generational wealth is built through home ownership.
Katrina Kamitz is here, Fox Businesses and Fox News' real estate contributor, host of Mansion Global. So, Katrina, as we look around hot spots in the world, we always been looking to Florida. Is Florida still hot to buy? I mean, it's physically hot.
So, but some say it is, and it's raining a lot today.
Some say it's really cooled off.
It has cooled off and we're getting a lot more supply in the market. So I was born and raised in Miami and Miami is completely different. We were discussing that than it was, you know, in the inception. It's gotten really expensive. Miami is one of the main markets inflation wise from groceries to just the cost of everything has gone up. But things are beginning to slow down because more supply is coming into the market. Whereas there's still areas like, you know, Tennessee, Austin's getting hit so hard because it depreciated so quickly. I was just in Colorado and I'm seeing
self-inflicted.
The
homeless has overrun it and overrun. The whole political correctness has destroyed this. Oftentimes ranked the number one suburb to live in America. Not anymore, but go ahead.
Yeah, and another thing with regard to Florida, Brian, is insurance. That's really what's hitting us the hardest, because so many friends of mine are just getting canceled, outright canceled, where their insurance company is just dropping them, you know, and you're seeing all of this weather. And I think it's going to be a really tough hurricane season.
And right now they're being flooded in South Florida. Evacuation warnings.
Yeah, that's where I used to live. So I remember it vividly.
So what's the answer to the – I know you're not an insurance expert, but home insurance is another bubbling issue mm-hmm. in this country.
Right. And so what I recommend to
people, it's not just Florida.
It's not just Florida. It's across the nation. And what I really do recommend is to really look at your insurance policy when they send it, because I see so many of these insurance companies trying to take advantage of people. So having, like, for instance, a premium for a secondary structure. Sometimes you don't have a secondary structure. So you could increase your deductible. Just make sure that you have enough savings so that, God forbid, that time comes, you know, you have things saved up. But there are ways to cut it, you know, and reduce some of the insurance costs. But ultimately, that's why a lot of retirees are also relocating out of Florida, because they simply can't afford it.
So what do you recommend to people? I saw one, he was a TikToker. He was a real estate expert. He said, stop trying to buy a house, buy an apartment building and rent one apartment to yourself.
And I love that idea. You know, I started off as a real estate investor when I was 17, 18 years old. So I really am a firm believer of that. Like, buy a fourplex or live in one of the units and rent out the rest so that you can – and then in 2 years, move. You know, a lot of investors do that, where they purchase a property, they live in it for 2 years, and then they relocate and they turn that into a rental. And that's how you build your real estate portfolio. So I think that's a great idea. You know, property taxes are also getting higher, so there's no way around that. So you just need to make sure that the asset will cover – the property taxes and the insurance and the maintenance, Brian, because that's something that's also, you know, the cost of labor has gone up, the cost of materials has gone up. So you really need to analyze the overall picture. But I do like that strategy.
But how do you feel about banks lending to somebody who doesn't have their first home to get an apartment building?
I like it, because
but do you think banks like it? That's what I worry about.
Okay. Well, so it depends on, and every situation is different, right? So it depends on that individual, the income that they're making, the stability of their job, et cetera, et cetera. But if you have revenue coming in, there actually are a lot of programs out there where banks like it, because they know that they have the revenue from these other units coming in to be able to cover it. So sometimes it's actually a really great strategy, because not only are you investing in an asset, but also the bank feels more secure because you have that rental income coming in.
All right. So finally, when we talk about the rate cut, would you be saying, if there's a rate cut and it's 0.5%, 0.25%, it's now, do you say to yourself, okay, we have an election, there's a rate cut, this might be a time to buy, if you see, or do you wait to see where it's going to trend? Will there be more?
I think we need to see things in the sixes for things to start to
where are we
change.
At now?
Oh, my God.
Nine?
Depending on the bank, sometimes we're at 7.11.
Right. Wait for six.
You could get 6.99, but I would go a little bit lower into the sixes. And I think because it is an election year, there's so much uncertainty. But there are deals out there. So I want to emphasize that, because there aren't a lot of buyers, there are deals out there, and there are sellers that sometimes they have a situation, a family situation, where they have to sell. And so there are opportunities in certain markets.
So President Trump has got to be meeting with CEOs right now. And he's with 200 CEOs today, meeting congressional leaders around now, starting in about 15 minutes. What do you think the message is to CEOs, and what do you think he's going to hear from them?
CEOs around the country?
Yeah, 200. The president will be meeting with CEO, big roundtable today.
I think the big message is something needs to happen, because the American people are suffering all around, right? The cost of everything has gone up. So policy needs to change. Something needs to happen in the economy. Like, we need help, you know, from people. I know people, one of my Uber drivers said he was working three jobs to be able to survive. And his wife's working two jobs. So I think that's the main message. And I think that's what's going to win the election moving forward, is the economy.
And Manchin Global, what can we look forward to?
Well, we filmed everything. It's on Fox Nation right now. So you see properties all over the country, you know, especially in the hot markets like Colorado and Florida and Texas and Tennessee, a lot of red states. So that's on Fox Nation. And I continue to cover real estate really on Fox News and Fox Business moving forward, because it's a hot topic.
Right. And by the way, if you want to get space and you want to be happy, don't live in New York. You have no space and nothing's available and everything's overpriced.
I tend to agree.
Katrina Campins, thanks so much. Fox Business, Fox News, real estate contributor, host of Manchin Global on Fox Nation. All right. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Back in a moment.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because, man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. There's a lot of stuff going on today. We're keeping an eye on what President Trump is doing with congressional leaders in the House and Senate on the Republican side. Just about everybody's there. I think they're more on board with him than ever before. He got good news yesterday in another major poll out of Pennsylvania. He's up two. And I also got indications that when the first Minnesota poll is coming in, and I think the last one was February, he might be in a dead heat there, dead heat in Virginia, a dead heat in New Hampshire. He was not supposed to be in play there. At the very least, it's going to make Biden spend some of those billions or millions on those states where he never planned on doing it. So I think that's important to bring out, too. I think that it's part of the good news for the president, the former president, as opposed to the current president. I worry that if he continues to decline, Joe Biden, as fast as he is, I think they're going to have to replace him. And if you're a Trump fan, you don't want another somebody else coming in here. Anybody else will be tougher than him, but all beatable. Kamala Harris actually might be worse. The stats on her are actually terrible. So we keep saying over and over again that the numbers are terrible in Los Angeles. People want to leave San Francisco. People know are leaving California. But when celebrities start leaving and speaking out, it really stands out. So I'm thinking about Goldie Hawn. Evidently, Kelly Ripa has a radio show or a podcast, at which time she's talking to Goldie Hawn. And like everybody else who gets to meet her, they're really impressed. Of course, extremely funny. And she's talking about how she's got to move out. She's got to move out of California. And she says this. She says her home was broken into twice. She goes, I was robbed once recently while I went out to dinner for a few hours with Kurt Russell. Quote, what if we couldn't live in L.A.? Where would we live? We both decided we think it would be Palm Desert. It's so safe. She says we got to get the heck out of Dodge. She's 78 years old, supposed to be living out her last days, probably got millions of dollars, watching her kids, watching her grandkids. Instead, she says how bad it is. And then she says this to Kelly Ripa right after. She reminisced about her dream location, and then she said, let's talk off camera. It's just because L.A. is terrible. I mean, we were robbed. So robbed twice, L.A. is terrible. I mean, this is when celebrities feel as though it's impugning with all their money for the top security, and it's impugning on their life and their livelihood. Pretty significant, I think, anyway. What else could I tell you that I think is important for you to know that maybe you're not getting in other places? Sebastian Maniscalco speaking out. So you know we love LifeVac here. LifeVac is this plunger device that Arthur Lee founded, a guy I played soccer with growing up. It's almost a plunger. You put it over your mouth. He saved countless lives, thousands of lives. And now you see it all over the channel and being advertised. So here's Sebastian Maniscalco taking a moment to do a somewhat serious video. Cut 36.
So my sister today bought this for everybody in the family. It's a choking kit for the home. She saw it on the news that it saved somebody's life. So then she went out and bought it for everybody. My sister's the type that she's prepared for catastrophe. Earthquake kit, choke kit, fire kit. My question to the group is, are you prepared for a travesty at the house, whether it be a fire, tornado, choking, what have you? Or are you just one of these people, we'll just wing it? Leave it in the comments below. Myself, I do have an earthquake kit. I also have a ladder that you could throw out of the second floor window in case the house is on fire and you could shimmy down. But I was wondering if that is something that everybody does, or is that because we're Italian and neurotic and constantly fear the worst?
So I was kept waiting for the punchline. I thought it was supposed to be funny, but it was actually him being a parent and being worried and his sister telling him that from Chicago. And I think it's true. In fact, they looked at my house for a while. I was on this terror list because Alawaki, remember that guy in Yemen that used to be an American that we droned and killed? Well, I evidently was third on his kill list for, I guess he watched an episode of Fox and Friends and it translated poorly. So, or listened to the radio show. And they came to my house to look at my house. And one of the first things they said to me is, you're on the second floor. Where's your rope ladder? And I'm thinking to myself, a rope ladder? I mean, why not just a swing? A giant, like, I would just take one rope and just leave it outside my house. By the time I got a rope ladder, stuck it on the windowsill and then jumped down. Then I'm thinking to myself, great. So I save myself and I leave my family with the terrorists on the inside. That is really, that's a little selfless. But I don't know what the big thing is with rope ladders. I thought we might have a better idea. Also, when it comes to firemen, is it really saved that much time to go down a pole in retrospect? That's one thing that I was thinking. All right. The other thing is Republicans routed the Democrats in that congressional baseball game. 25,000 people showed up, and the final score was 31-11. Okay. It wasn't known. I guess there's some athletes there on the Republican side. But here's the other thing. You also had climate activists run on the field right in the middle, of course, nationally televised on Fox Sports One, and they ran on the field and they got tackled. They started screaming out, these are the climate defiance idiots. Eight of them had been arrested for shutting down the congressional baseball game. They were behind bars right now. It's members of Congress. They say it's members of Congress who should be locked up. Keep in mind, after what happened with Steve Scalise, if you are an activist, you must be really an idiot to go into a congressional baseball game and run on the field. You know about the security there? All leadership gets their own secret service. You think you're going to get 3 feet and not going to get beat up, or you're not going to get put in jail? Here's what they said in a tweet on X. We were brutalized, beaten, and bruised as we were over the congressional baseball game. Our bodies are bloodied, but our spirits are unmoved. We will build a better world. We will rise again. We will prevail. Just you wait. My goodness, how delusional. How unproud are these parents of these idiots? When you say to yourself, my whole world is slowing down global warming, the first thing you want to do, if you really cared about global warming, go to China. Tiananmen Square is open, I understand. They keep it clear. But you run out there and you tell China, stop building a coal plant a week, and you protest and you run everywhere. You know, run in and out of buildings, paint your face or spray paint graffiti on some of their buildings. Let's see how open they are. Because in America, we don't really respond to when you glue yourself to priceless paintings and when you run onto a field and say global warming's got to stop. We laugh at you. The only time we stop laughing is when you block our way to get to work or to get on vacation or get to the airlines. Then we hate you even more. I'm Brian Kilmeade. Go to BrianKilmeade.com because I want to see you in Indianapolis June 29th. It's going to be a great show, History, Liberty, and Laughs. And also, I'll see you at the end of July in Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania. Meet and greet opportunities, too. Hope to see everybody in person. Everybody who gets the meet and greet opportunity gets Teddy and Booker T signed and a picture taken.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Thanks for being here, everybody. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. G7 underway in Italy. We'll keep you up to date on what's happening. Supreme Court offering decisions. One just came in. I'll go through it. We'll also be taking your calls at 1-866-408-7669. We'll be following all things that are happening. Also, the former president meeting with congressional leaders behind closed doors today. First time in really years. So we'll see. I think he's really consolidated the party pretty strongly, and I think Mark Thiessen's going to be asked that question. Mark, you might want to jot something down if you have a pen handy. That will be my first question. We're also going to talk to Bernie Moreno. He's the Republican nominee for the U.S. Senate in Ohio. President Trump is firmly behind him. Then we'll do a simulcast with Stuart Varney so you can finally see what I look like. Let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
You don't think President Biden has any responsibility for the fact that terrorists are being allowed into this country?
The fact that they were identified and detained and we know where they are is them doing their job.
Clueless. Terror fears rise as the broken border has served as a welcome mat for our enemies over the last 3.5 years. Are the worries warranted? I say yes.
Number two.
Do you plan to confront any of the bad blood between the two of you or any of the issues you had, including over January 6th?
I've said earlier this year, I support him. He's been earned the nomination by the voters all across the country. And, of course, I'll be at the meeting.
All right. There we go. Mitch McConnell and Donald Trump, 2024. Trump on Capitol Hill, sealing up support for Republicans in the House and Senate who might need his support. Will Trump and McConnell bury the hatchet? I think they will. We'll see. And what does that mean for Biden?
Number one.
We have already imposed sanctions on PRC entities today. We are doing more. But of course, we're not only focused on China. We're focused on the broad network of entities and individuals working to try to circumvent sanctions and get these inputs to Russia.
All right, there you go. Jake Sullivan, G7, about to begin. We talk about the critical agenda to combat the rise of China and Russia and a plan for a massive boost for Ukraine. So this is the Supreme Court decision, as they're bringing Mark Thiessen. The Supreme Court upholds full access to the birth control drug. How do you say that? Do you know? Yeah, the abortion drug. That's what I use. Mifepristone or whatever.
Mifepristone.
Yeah, yeah. So no change.
Never used it.
Right, but there's no change to it, so that's not, the Democrats are not going to be able to use that one. We're still waiting on a lot of other cases, one of which is presidential immunity. That will directly affect the former president.
It will, and I think my guess is they will probably come up with some kind of qualified immunity, which would be a big victory for the president. If you just follow the arguments that they had in the court and what people were saying, there really was nobody arguing. Of course, you know, they could come out with a different decision than the way they asked questions, but based on the questioning, it seemed like there was not a lot of a large segment of the court that was saying there was no immunity whatsoever.
All right, so let's fast forward and talk to what the message behind closed doors is probably like. You know where President Trump was when he left office in 2020 after January 6th, where he was after the midterms, where a lot of his candidates were not successful. Compare that, Mark Thiessen, to where he is at right now on the precipice of formally getting the nomination and where he is at the polls. What do you think the message is first with the House and Senate?
Well, I think, first of all, he's the nominee. He's earned it. He campaigned. He went out and put his name out there, and the Republicans across the country selected him. So Congress needs to get behind him, and members of Congress need to get behind him and help him win, because there's no benign alternative, even if you don't like Donald Trump. The Biden administration is an absolute disaster on every front. Our borders are in chaos. Our college campuses are in chaos. The world is in chaos. None of these wars would have happened if Donald Trump had won the 2020 election. There's no way that Vladimir Putin would have invaded Ukraine, or that Iran, you know, after he had whacked Qasem Soleimani, would turn around and try and start something with Israel. So we just can't afford to have another 4 years of this disaster. And the reality is the alternative is not even Joe Biden, as bad as that is. It's President Kamala Harris, because there is no way that Joe Biden is going to be president 6 years, 4 or 5 years from now. Not a chance.
Did you watch him on the world stage today? After taking the entire day off, being the last to arrive, he looked clueless on stage. I don't think he knew where he was or who he was talking to, and on the G7. So I think that adds to it. And I think any Biden supporter must be rolling their eyes saying, is there a plan B? But looking at Trump and meeting with Mitch McConnell, who's going to be leaving leadership, here's what McConnell said yesterday, cut 12.
Do you plan to confront any of the bad blood between the two of you, or any of the issues you had, including over January 6th?
You know, I said 3 years ago, right after the Capitol was attacked, that I would support our nominee, regardless of who it was, including him. I've said earlier this year, I support him. He's been earned the nomination by the voters all across the country. And of course, I'll be at the meeting tomorrow.
What do you think? Where does this go? They just got mutual.
There's no reason for either of them to be in conflict, because, look, Mitch McConnell is stepping aside anyway. So there's no reason for Donald Trump to go after him in some way, because he's not trying to push him out. He's stepping aside on his own. And, you know, despite their disagreements, they accomplished a lot together. If it was not for Mitch McConnell, Donald Trump would not have had that Supreme Court seat to put Justice Gorsuch in. And Mitch McConnell shepherded through his nominees. It was because Mitch McConnell was able to convince the Republican conference in the Senate to get rid of the filibuster for Supreme Court nominees after the Democrats tried to filibuster Gorsuch, that he was able to get through Kavanaugh and Amy Coney Barrett. None of those three nominees would have been put through the Supreme, would have been confirmed with 60 votes. Trump has a lot to be thankful for to McConnell. McConnell has a lot to be thankful for to Trump, and I think the party needs to unite. And I know McConnell's in that headspace. I hope Trump is as well.
Very few people I could talk to that understand the ongoing threat of terror in America and terror around the world. I've been informed by people that when we pulled out of Afghanistan, we lost all our intelligence. We lost so much in terms of getting our handle and lid on where the next intelligence group, ISIS-K, Hamas, ISIS, what well, Al-Qaeda is. When we left everything, and we left Terry University and possibly some of the weapons used in the Hamas attack against Israel. And now we find out with our border wide open, six terrorists were picked up a couple of days ago, and even more might be here. And the Border Patrol and ICE and police forces across the country are not even in contact. How close are we to another terror attack, Mark, just using the logic and what you know?
Well, first of all, just on your first point, just to confirm what you're saying, that we don't have any intelligence. Remember after the Abbeygate massacre, when Joe Biden said that we will find the people who did this and we will hunt them down and we will take them out? Well, it's 3 years later. Where's the retaliation? Where's the strike? We haven't done it. The only thing he killed was a bunch of innocent civilians in a car. Why is that? Because we have no idea where the hell they are. Because we have no boots on the ground, because we have no intelligence on the ground. So we don't know what the hell's going on in Afghanistan. Remember all this talk about how we're going to have we're over the horizon capability to take out terrorists? Where the hell is that? We haven't taken out any terrorists in Afghanistan. The only guy we took out was Zawahiri.
Zawahiri, he was on the porch overlooking Kabul. Robert Holden is a Democrat from New York City, a Democrat on the New York City Council, but cares about the country. He is beyond alarmed. Cut 22.
It's frightening because how many millions of people have gotten through? And the law of averages says, you know, we're going to have an issue. And I'm glad they were caught, but it wasn't with the help of NYPD because they're prohibited from working with ICE on any immigration situations. My colleagues in the city council over the years have saw to it that, you know, this is how they want to operate. And I think that's very dangerous.
So, I mean, and he gets more and more alarmed as he goes. He knows this is a problem. I mean, but we never hear anybody talking about it. But they're rallying in the street wearing Hamas headbands, chanting anti-Semitic phrases, vowing the end of worshiping infantata, talking about jihad. What would have happened to them during George W. Bush's days? Mark Thiessen was back. I believe he can hear me, but I'm not sure he's able to respond. But just to give you an idea of the pushback, I am not editing this. I'm letting you hear their comments. Democratic lawmakers were asked about the threat. The Tajikistan residents that were brought up here, coming here illegally, all on the terror list that we didn't pick up initially when they crossed into our country, but we got them in Los Angeles, Chicago, and New York. Listen to these lawmakers. They don't see a problem as they talk to Hillary Vaughn. Cut 26.
Do you think that President Biden's border policies are putting Americans at risk for another 9/11?
We should obviously arrest and detain people that commit terrorist acts. And so I think that obviously it's really important for us to address the issues here that it is that you and the others have raised. At the same time, we should be making sure that we have both the secure and humane border policy.
You don't think President Biden has any responsibility for the fact that terrorists are being allowed into this country?
So the fact that they were identified and detained and we know where they are is them doing their job.
So that's good enough, Mark.
Absolutely. Sorry, I dropped there. I had so much brilliant commentary and it got lost in the ether.
It happens a lot with my guests. They just either get really bored or I'm so brilliant, they say, I can't match that. I quit.
That's exactly what I did. I just dropped the phone and walked away. Look, we've had hundreds of people on the terrorist watch list caught at the border, right? Those are the people we know. There are also, you know, over 3 million gotaways who've come into this country. Now, if you're coming into this country, and most people coming in know that they turn themselves into the Border Patrol because they know that they're going to get allowed to stay, right? So if you're not turning yourself into the Border Patrol, there's a reason. You're either a criminal or you've got something on your record that they don't want to know. And we've got millions of those people who've come into this country. We have no idea who the hell they are. How many people on the terror watch list have snuck into this country and infiltrated us through this unsecure southern border? How can we allow this after the attacks of 9/11? How the hell can we have a border that's completely open like that? What kind of moron responds 20 years after 9/11 and opens our border to anyone in the hell who wants to come in here? Sorry, I'm mad.
And I am too. But how about this? You might have missed this. A man armed with a gun and other weapons was arrested at 1:30 in the morning today following a traffic stop in Queens. Why did they pull him over? Because he had absconded. You couldn't really see his license plate. So the cops just said, let me just pull this guy over. And it turns out as they got into his car and got him under arrest, they found a Glock, heavy body armor, NYPD uniform item, stun guns, weighted whips, handcuffs, two axes, and a New York City transit vest. I mean, that they're going for New York. They got the Tajiks in New York, and they found these guys in New York. Now, if anyone thinks he's a cop, take a look at him. Facial hair, hair down to his chest, back, not a cop. So can you imagine a guy masquerading as a cop, wearing the full body armor, how much damage they can do before we realize, orientated ourselves and realized he was a terrorist. So this is what's happening.
And the other thing that's happening, by the way, if you look at that protest outside the Nova Music Festival site the other day, which was disgusting, all those people in these protests are wearing keffiyehs, covering their faces to cover their identities. I know in Virginia, under Virginia law, and I think it's also true in New York, it is against the law to protest with your face covered. And the police are not enforcing these laws. There are laws all across the state that you're allowed to do. Imagine if a terrorist decided, you know what, I'm just going to infiltrate one of these protests and blow something up. You know, how would we know who the hell they were? You should not be allowed to protest in this country with your face covered, especially when you're chanting Intifada, Intifada, and kill the Jews. The police are not enforcing the laws against masking while protesting in this country, and it's a disaster waiting to happen.
I know. It's no question about it. Now, lastly, when it comes to Ukraine, we're going to sign a 10-year mini defense plan with them, vow to help them. We're not going to be like NATO, where if they're attacked, we go in. But if they're attacked, we have to send advisors in within 24 hours. But symbolism to a degree. But in response to us allowing them to hit inside Moscow, inside Russia's border, they have sent a flotilla of military vessels to Cuba. Mark Thiessen, what should our reaction be?
Our reaction should be we're going to let the Ukrainians fire into Russia as much as they want. We put severe restrictions on how much they can do. It's like with everything with Biden he does, it's slow rolling the weapons. It's just creeping efforts. If we had given the Ukrainians everything we're giving them now and the rules of engagement we're giving them now, they would have won. If we had done that when the war started, they would have won it within a matter of months, when Russia was on its heels. It's because of Joe Biden's strategy that this war has been dragged out. And I'll tell you something, Donald Trump, a lot of these isolationists like Vance and Marjorie Taylor Greene, they may have a surprise in store when Donald Trump comes into office, because Donald Trump has said that he will tell Putin, you need to stop your aggression, and if you don't do it, I'm going to double the aid to Ukraine. And we'll give them more than we ever have if necessary.
He also indicated Putin's acting in a way he was not acting when they had met, as if to say, this guy is
wouldn't
this,
happen.
Yeah. As bad as he was,
it wouldn't
he's
have
worse.
Happened if Trump was president.
The
it
other thing is,
if he was, if it, go ahead.
Mark, if he was so against your vision of foreign policy, he wouldn't be considering Tom Cotton and Marco Rubio.
Yeah. Look, this is the guy who whacked Qasem Soleimani. This is the guy who bombed Syria twice. This is a guy who took the gloves off our military and destroyed the ISIS caliphate in a matter of months when Obama couldn't do it. You know, this is not an isolationist. These are not isolationist things. And by the way, J.D. Vance would have advised him against every single one of those things. He's got to be very careful who he surrounds himself with, because there are a lot of people who are isolationists who think he's one of them, and he's not. He believes Donald Trump flexes America's military might on the world stage, and that's why he was the first president since Ronald Reagan that we didn't get dragged into a war. He believes in peace through strength. Mm-hmm. Our deterrent was credible under him. He doesn't need to surround himself with a bunch of isolationists who don't think like him.
And Mark, I just want to tell you, just because you hung up on me twice, it doesn't mean we're not still friends. I think we got through it well.
That.
I know you have a temper.
We'll get there.
And just please try to keep it under control next time, please. That's all I ask. He gets angry and he just hangs up the phone. Mark Thiessen, thank you.
Know.
When we come back, what did Sebastian Maniscalco do that you'll find very intriguing, informative, but not funny? Don't move.
Both sides, all opinions. It's Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
So my sister today bought this for everybody in the family. It's a choking kit for the home. She saw it on the news that it saved somebody's life, so then she went out and bought it for everybody. My sister's the type that she's prepared for catastrophe. Earthquake kit, choke kit, fire kit. My question to the group is, are you prepared for a travesty at the house, whether it be a fire, tornado, choking, what have you? Or are you just one of these people, we'll just wing it?
So Sebastian Maniscalco, I listened to the whole clip and I thought to myself, now here comes the joke. But he held up a life hack that Arthur Lee invented that advertised on our show and our network. You know, it looks like a plunger. You just put it over your mouth and you basically save somebody's life. It doesn't take any training. It just take go get it, have it, and use it. That's why restaurants, fire departments, police cars, many homes, people give it on different gifts. But it was very strange to see Sebastian Maniscalco grab this device, say you got to use it. Think about this. Can you imagine giving someone that present of a life hack and they call you up a few weeks from now and said, what you just gave me saved my kid's life? So that's when that's what's so special. And I thought for a comedian that would straight face say, go get this, matters. You should go get a life hack.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
All right, welcome back, everybody. The President of the United States is meeting with congressional leaders now, many of which have fantasies of not only President Trump winning, but keeping control of the House and winning the Senate. Now, if that's going to happen, they have to make some progress and try to flip a seat. It's got to be Pennsylvania. It's got to be Montana. It looks like West Virginia is a given. A lot of people are hopeful for what's happening in Michigan, but all eyes are on Ohio, where it looks like President Trump has got between 5 and 10 points up. But Bernie Moreno is running for that seat. He's got the Republican nomination, and he trails in most polls by 4 or 5. What will it take to make up the difference in that increasingly red state? Bernie Moreno joins us now. Bernie, welcome.
Thank you for having me, Brian. It's all about Ohio. We're the Super Bowl of the Senate race here, and we're going to make it happen.
Right. So how do you close that gap? What is the senator, sitting senator Sherrod Brown, not doing that you would?
Well, he ran for the first time when Richard Nixon was in the White House. He's never had a job in the private sector. He has an insanely liberal voting record, and we've lost 200,000 manufacturing jobs in the 30 years that he's been in Washington, D.C. He's voted far left of Ohio. He's more in line with a voting record that you'd expect from Massachusetts or California, but certainly not here in this state. Of course, every 6 years, he's a political cicada, and he reemerges from the ground as a moderate and starts talking about bipartisanship. And in this case, Brian, you won't believe it, he's actually praising Donald Trump in his ads. So this is the depth of the depravity that he's willing to do. But we're going to expose all that. We'll have the right amount of resources. I'm campaigning extremely hard. I've sold all of my businesses to focus on winning this race, and that's exactly what we're going to do.
How'd you make your money, Bernie?
So I started with one tiny little car dealership. I put every cent I had in my life into buying it. I bought it from an American legend, Roger Penske. He gave me the opportunity to buy that dealership. I took that one dealership, built 15 dealerships over a 10-year period of time, 30 brands, $1 billion in sales, sold that business, started a technology company. I just sold my shares in that business about a year and a half ago, and now fully invested of everything so that I could focus on winning the Senate seat.
And so you want this Senate seat. You feel as though Ohio should have a Republican. You had a tough primary. Everyone who tries to get through a primary there is tough. J.D. Vance had a tough time, too. And then he had a tough time in the general election. But I think that this is a situation where the President Trump is polling better than you. Why?
Well, it's about name ID. So obviously President Trump has a literally 100% name ID. Sherrod Brown probably has a 99% name ID. I'm still in the low 60s. So once people get to know me, we expose Sherrod Brown's record. I feel we'll definitely be able to way overcome that 5-point gap. I think J.D. was probably down 11 at this point in time. In the previous cycle, Jim Renacci was down 13 at this exact moment in time. And we'll have the right resources to make certain that we can expose them. So I think it's just a factor of name ID and exposing who Sherrod Brown really is.
So in 2021, I know you were thinking about running, and then you met with President Trump. He asked you to wait, right?
No, I told him that I was going to drop out of the race because it was clear that he was going to endorse probably JD, and it didn't make sense for me to participate in the circular firing squad. I like JD. JD actually a great senator, a good friend. As I remind him often, he launched his campaign after I did, but it made sense for me to step out of that race and support JD, and I'm happy I did because we've got a great senator now.
Which so as you try to campaign, I understand they're pouring money. Senator Schumer is pouring money into Sherrod Brown. How do you defend that, knowing maybe despite no matter how well you do, you're going to be outraised?
Yeah, I mean, we just won't be outraised the same way we were in 2018. In 2018, the National Party put in $0 into Ohio. Renacci got out fundraised 10-1. We will not have that dynamic. We're very fortunate that we have a lot of outside groups that are really going deep into Ohio. So we'll have the right resources. I believe President Trump will probably win by about 12 to 15 points. And if that's the case, there's just no way Sherrod Brown can overcome that. Plus, Brian has a hideous voting record. This is a guy who's voted against every border security measure. He's a guy that is absolutely for the Green New Deal energy agenda. All of that hurts working class Americans. He's not been on the side of working class Americans when it comes to his votes. His rhetoric is different, but look at the middle class in this country. They're getting absolutely crushed by generationally high inflation. That's all a result of the attack on American energy and insane amounts of government spending.
What do you have in Ohio? I understand you got oil and you have fracking, correct?
Oh, yeah. We're huge in natural gas. We got oil refineries. We've got coal. We are an energy-dominant state. That's what built Ohio. You know, back in 1949, six of the wealthiest 14 cities in America were in Ohio. Dayton, Youngstown, Lorain, great American cities. They were devastated by terrible policies at the national level. That's why Ohio's become such a red state, and that's why we're going to win again this year.
So when you look at what's happening now with the pause on new leases on oil and gas, what does that do to the people of Ohio? What does it do to your state economy? That's what President Biden has done.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this guy from day one canceling the Keystone Pipeline, right up until banning exports of LNG, these new regulations around coal, which basically means there's no more coal fired plants in America, no more fracking, these regulations on forcing everybody to drive an electric vehicle. 30% of our agriculture crops go to liquefied fuels. So it's an abject disaster. Nobody wants to be told by the government what kind of car to drive. That's all Sherrod Brown and Joe Biden. And that's what ultimately, the referendum is going to be in November 5th. Do you want a government that's intrusive in your life, or do you want to restore our constitutional principles in which the free market works and we have a national government that does specifically what the Constitution has it do and not have an administrative state that's empowered by these radicals on the left?
Bernie Moreno, my guest, he's a Republican nominee that wants to displace Sherrod Brown and get 6 years in the Senate representing Ohio. You would think it is right to be taken because it's been an increasingly red state. But in most polls up until this point, the Marist poll, the latest, has Brown up by 5. Now, the one thing that I was discovering lately is the difference between buying a car in a carbon state and a non-carbon state. If you go to New York to go buy a car that's gas, you are finding out that these dealerships have been forced to carry these electric cars, whether it's an electric Jeep or it's an electric pickup that nobody wants. But if you go to Florida, you just don't have that problem. What has this push for electric cars done for manufacturing in Ohio?
Well, I'll tell you this, Brian. If it continues, the auto industry is done in America. The Chinese will completely take over the industry. They own 80% of the base materials. They'll build these giant factories in Mexico, send us cheap electric cars. The government will subsidize them and mandate them, destroy the companies. You look at Ford. Ford lost over $100,000 for every EV they sold. That's just the car company. Then you look at the dealerships. You talk to anybody in the car business, these electric cars are sitting around. Nobody wants them. They have to be massively subsidized in order to sell them. It is absolute insanity. It doesn't work for everybody. I'm not anti-electric car. There's some cool electric cars out there. But why should the government decide what car is good, what car is bad? And by the way, electric cars have been around since the 1900s. This isn't new technology. It's just that over time, they realized that the internal combustion engine was a much better vehicle, and we should be investing in that. And I'll give you one last factoid. Ohio makes more internal combustion engines as a state than any other state in America. Can you imagine getting rid of that industry, what that would do to the to our economy here in Ohio.
What has it done already?
Well, it's made it so that we have auto workers that aren't certain whether they're going to have a job or a future. We've seen layoffs at the Jeep plant in Toledo. The Lordstown plant here in northeast Ohio was shut down. And General Motors is building electric vehicles in China, as is Lincoln. Mexico is where most of the Ford electric cars are made. You can see this pattern. I mean, it's absolutely terrible. Let's let the markets dictate the pace of innovation. Toyota is the one car company that is sane in this area. They've been saying this and sounding the alarm from the beginning. Let the markets tell the car companies what kind of cars to make. Innovation will happen over gradual time. If it were up to Elizabeth Warren and Sherrod Brown and Joe Biden, you and I would be talking on a portable 8-track player. Government is not built for innovation.
I get you. The other thing, it took me a second to realize what you were saying. The other thing is, with all the infrastructure money they got, they built eight terminals.
Yeah.
I mean, this. How can you possibly, if everybody had an electric car, nobody would be able to use it. And maybe that would what they work. If they try to make trucks electric, they will take forever to charge. Production would drop. Prices would go up. They have to carry less. No one seems to have thought this through.
No, it's all a cult. It's a cult that says this is what we should do. Like any other cult that doesn't have reason behind it. It's just emotion. It's fear. It's this idea that the planet's burning. But here's what I would say, Brian. If you're concerned about the climate, you're concerned about the planet, you want America to be an energy-dominant country because we do energy better. We do it safer. We do it cleaner. China's building coal plants. We're dismantling ours. They're building solar panels and shipping them to America. They don't use it themselves.
Right.
So that's the insanity of the left position.
Well, he was in the private sector, and now he wants to get into public service and be at the senator from Ohio. He's a Republican nominee. Bernie Moreno, best of luck. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Brian. If your listeners can go on BernieMoreno.com and help out, that'd be fantastic.
All right. He wants to close that 5-point gap. Back in a moment.
Now, the Brian Kilmeade Show joins Fox Business's Varney & Company with Stuart Varney, live on your radio and on Fox Business. Here's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back. In a matter of moments, we'll be on with Stuart Varney on FBN. Now, not only can you watch us on the stream on Fox Nation, you can watch us on the app. If you just click on watch on the bottom of the app and you just go over into Fox News Radio, now you get to see us on FBN, too, as well as you're in our family of affiliates, I hope. And we'll talk about some things that we've been talking about on the air already, and then we'll build off it on the back end, 1-866-408-7669. So let's listen in.
It means that Brian Kilmeade will magically appear on the right-hand side of your screen in 3 seconds. Don't make me a liar. There you go. Here he is. Thank you very much indeed, Mr. Kilmeade. President Biden says he will not pardon Hunter, but the White House won't rule out the possibility of shortening his sentence, commuting it, if there is one. Roll it.
What I'm saying is that the president, I have not spoken to the president about this. And what I'm saying is he was asked about a pardon. He was asked about the trial specifically, and he answered it very clearly, very forthright. As we know, the sentencing hasn't even been scheduled yet. I don't have anything beyond what the president said. He's been very clear about this.
All right, Brian, that really wasn't much of an answer now, was it? The
do
question
we ever
really
get,
is.
Stuart, if, do we if, ever get an answer from her?
No, not normally, no. If so, Biden commutes Hunter's sentence, how would it play out politically?
I don't think it'd be a problem at all. I really don't. Hunter's not the problem. Remember that he is doing crack, grabbing hookers, obviously buying illegal drugs. Now we find out he's giving it to Haley Biden, getting somebody else addicted. This is despicable behavior, even for an addict. What can I tell you? And for those people who believe it's overblown, check the laptop out, which we suddenly found out was real. Who would have known? I had no idea it was real. For the longest time, I thought the Russians had really gotten into Delaware to get to that repair store to mess with laptops. So up until that moment, until recently, I thought it was fake. So after I sobered up and realized how much trouble this guy is, but I'm interested in the tax case. Why? Hunter Biden's an addict trying to come out of it. Wish him the best. It would be great if he recognized his love child from another state and his father actually picked up the phone and talked to that little girl because she seems like a wonderful little person. that her name is Navy. That's another story, but it also gives an indication of what kind of example he's leaving for the American people should that situation happen in your life. But I'm going to bring it to something else. I just care about the forensics leading to the millions of dollars that poured into all his accounts, which he forgot to pay taxes on, which is coming your way in September, unless he cuts a deal. Sentencing in September, another case coming up. That's the case where Joe Biden golfs with his business partners, eats dinner with his business partners, eats breakfast with his business partners, calls into meetings with his business partners, but had nothing to do with his business cases. That's the story. The story is, what was his father up to?
You're right, Brian. I'll change the subject for a second here. Transgender swimmer Leah Thomas will not be allowed to enter elite competitions, and that includes the Paris Olympics. I call that a big win for women's sports. How about you?
Well, I'm a little disappointed. I wanted so much to watch a one man beat women in all different sports. So now, sadly, I'm going to have to watch women compete against women. It's going to be such a disappointment. Why watch the Olympics if you see people compete fairly? Why just not knowing the end and who's going to win and wondering what gender they are? That big mystery at the end where we find out the gender they were when they were born as opposed to the one they were competed in. Now there's going to be no excitement. We're just going to have to look at the total time at the end and find out who won. Who crosses the finish line first and then crown them gold medalists as opposed to who was once a man and decided to beat up on women. I just find it unbelievable that this is a story, but it is a story on every channel. And to me, it is the most non-story there is. And by the way, the place used to call home, they're also fed up with all this transgenderism. Yeah, if you're a transgender, you got to compete with other transgenders. Sign up. There's a clipboard and there's a sheet and there's a pen attached. Sign up. I'll watch. But just keep men going against men, women against women. I thought we could pretty much start with, then we could worry about steroids and who's cheating. Then we could go back to the good old days when we watched the East German women with backs bigger than Arnold Schwarzenegger. And we're wondering why they're winning the golds. Those are the good old days. Who suddenly have acne all over their deltoids.
Well, you're straight, far and wide today, haven't you, Brian? You've really got fired up, too. Yes. We like it. We do like it, Brian. Come back soon.
Well, thanks for calling.
Mr. Kilmeade,
anytime
will
you
return.
Call. All
right. See you later.
All right. I really don't know what to say to that. I just found this. Just find the whole conversation so very strange. And I just think, too, that these women's national teamers, like Megan Rapinoe, said, yeah, it's really no problem. And I believe Alex Morgan, still active, no problem if a man wants to play soccer at the international level against a woman. For those people that don't want to call 1-800-MARTINA-NAVRATILOVA, who, by the way, first outward superstar lesbian to come out and say, I'm a lesbian and I still want to compete against women. Nobody had a problem with that. She has a problem with this. And then they tell her, stop talking. Billie Jean King evidently has no problem with that. To me, this is idiocy. What happened to common sense? And I think what we saw with these European elections answered that question. What happened to common sense? That happened is we want it back. And that's why the right wing got rid of environmental zealots. Same sex, the sex you're born with, you should be competing with. And I thought Brit Hume said it very well yesterday. We just have lost common sense. We lost common sense at the border, our defenses, immigration, voting. When you have Joe Biden still tell everybody that America hates black people, what happened to common sense? This is not the story we should be hearing, nor are we accepting. When you have Joe Biden come out and say the reason why the border is broken is because of Republicans, that makes no sense. We're smarter than that. And when you have Joe Biden come out and say the president wants to get rid of democracy, do you know what the most stats say now on the studies? Who wants to get rid of democracy? Who's better at preserving it? They're basically a dead heat. And you know who never says that almost? Donald Trump. But go ahead. I just saw Nancy Pelosi give an interview yesterday that Donald Trump will destroy democracy if he becomes president. He didn't for 4 years, but he'll do it now. And this is for a woman that is using insider information to get rich by getting stock trades that nobody on Wall Street can match, number one. And number two, she's a woman that tore up the State of the Union in full view of the rest of the world to show an utter disdain for a president. I imagine almost everybody from another party looking at a president really disagrees with that president. But nobody could be as classless to do what she did, ever. And yet she still wants a pass and people treat her like she's royalty. This is Brian Kilmeade Show. Keep it here. And by the way, I hope to see you in person in Indianapolis coming up on June 29th. BrianKilmeade.com for tickets.
from high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad to everyone who came out in Dallas to see us. Especially our guest, Colonel Alan West. It was great to see Daryl Johnston. It was also great to see Talmadge Boston, all the stalwarts in the area. And we're now on KLIF. So we're grateful to be on and great to see everyone in person, especially who came out to the bar on Tuesday night. And then Wednesday night was able to do the show there. And Fox and Friends from Kubi's, in the legendary place that dates back to the 1700s in Germany and 13 generations overall of Kubi. So it's pretty cool to do that. But we're back in action today. And I'm back in New York right now. We're stunning news. A man armed with a gun and a weapon at 1:30 in the morning today was arrested following just a typical traffic stop in Queens because these officers couldn't find his license plate. It was no one could see it. It was blocked. So he pulled him over and he found the guy with body armor, NYPD uniform items, stun guns, handcuffs, a transit vest, and a Glock, a whole bunch of magazines. Is this a terrorist? I'm looking at the picture. He doesn't look like he just came off the beaches. The beaches of Los Angeles after winning a surfing competition. How about that? A matter of moments, we'll talk to Josh Crash Hour. Also this hour, we'll talk to Lieutenant Colonel Dan Hampton, who's doing great work helping Ukrainians be victorious over in their battle against Russia. So let's get to the big three.
Now with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
You don't think President Biden has any responsibility for the fact that terrorists are being allowed into this country?
The fact that they were identified and detained and we know where they are is them doing their job.
That is pretty interesting from Democratic lawmakers who see no problem. Terror fears rise as the broken border continues to be broken. A welcome mat set out for our enemies. Yes, not our allies. Over the last 3.5 years, are your worries warranted? I say yes.
Number two.
Do you plan to confront any of the bad blood between the two of you or any of the issues you've had, including over January 6th?
I've said earlier this year, I support him. He's been earned the nomination by the voters all across the country. And, of course, I'll be at the meeting.
Okay, Mitch McConnell, we'll see. Trump on Capitol Hill right now just met with House members. He's going to also sell his brand again or reaffirm it with the Republicans on the Senate side, many of which have great hopes and have reason to be hopeful they'll be in the majority. And what will it mean for them? Can they be ready to go should Trump be victorious? And how can they help each other? That's the message. We'll give you the latest.
Number one.
We have already imposed sanctions on PRC entities today. We are doing more. But, of course, we're not only focused on China. We're focused on the broad network of entities and individuals working to try to circumvent sanctions and get these inputs to Russia.
Yeah, Jake Sullivan, ever since you put the sanctions on Russia, Iran, North Korea, China, India have all been ignoring them and profiting because of that. The G7 about to begin. In fact, it's underway right now. We talk about the critical agenda, combating China, combating Russia, and a plan for a massive boost for Ukraine. And they're talking about some type of loan right now. That loan would be this. They froze all Russian assets overseas, mostly in Europe. But they don't want to take it. And the problem with taking it, it's a bad precedent. Because they do want people to have a global bank, a world bank. And if you just, even though as belligerent and as atrocious as Russia's international behavior has been, aggressive behavior remains. If they start taking money, it could blow up the whole system and hasten the exit of the dollar for most of the globe. But what they said is this, what about the interest on the assets? Why don't we give that to Ukraine? And in the meantime, while we vote on that, what about the interest in taking a loan out on that interest and the World Bank could be giving over $50 billion? Man, would that go a long way. Those are some of the creative things they're trying to do to get the Ukrainians the weapons they need. What they don't have is more than 45 million people. There's a lot of people who don't want to serve. Many people are fighting nonstop for the last 2+ years. And the Russians have 400,000 plus dead. But they can call up as many as they have 150 million in their country. So even though they're a declining population, they have 3 times the population of the Ukrainians, and they're just drafting them. They don't draft rich people. They draft working class who have no choice, so they'll be killed, or they could leave. And a lot of them are choosing to leave the country. So the country is withering, but they've gone to a total military-based economy right now. Now, they're suffering some setbacks, but in other areas, they're growing, and they're getting off the dollar. We should be aware of that. And that should be an economic thing we should be aware of. Even though the dollar is the most dependable currency, nobody really wants to deal with the Chinese currency or them as the all-time ruler of the world economy. That is something to consider. In terms of what's going on at the G7, I mean, look at this. Japan is a threat. In the fall, there's going to be elections. The current leader of Japan is under threat. We saw these European elections, and the European elections didn't go well for everyone except Maloney. Prime Minister Sunak, 3 weeks away from an election, he's supposed to get routed. President Macron of France called for a snap election in 3 weeks, but his parliament has been dissolved because far right is beginning to excel in these elections. Now they're getting worried that Macron could be out. Olaf Scholz, his socialist party, has been humbled in the last election. They no longer have the majority. And in Japan, as I mentioned, Kishida is facing a rising unrest within his liberal Democratic Party. And then you look at Joe Biden. Anybody that looks at Joe Biden or sees the polls knows that he is definitely in jeopardy of not getting four more years. And I'm being generous. Having said that, I'm looking at the G7. I'm looking at, well, the only person who's going to really be there in a year is going to be Maloney. So let's go to Josh Krasshauer now. Oh, he's not there yet? Okay, good. So instead of doing that, let's talk about what happened. I don't know if you've seen it, but this morning we're up. I'm doing Fox and Friends. And you see President Biden on stage. And even though he took yesterday off to recalibrate because he's been back and forth overseas as an 81-year-old who looks 91, back and forth overseas twice in 4 days, he needed a day to recalibrate. They don't admit it, but that's what happened. Senator Tom Cotton, on what he observed. Cut three.
We all saw Joe Biden arrive this morning in Italy. It's embarrassing, and it's harmful to America's interests. When world leaders see a president who is infirm and weak, shuffling around the stage, not knowing where he's supposed to go, they know that they can take advantage of America. And that's not just our adversaries, our allies as well.
He knows it, and he went on to talk more. Cut four.
When Donald Trump was president, these G7 and G20 meetings and NATO meetings may not have been, you know, like tea and crumpets, but that was because our friends knew that Donald Trump was serious and he meant business and he was going to put America's interests first and he expected them to contribute to our common defense. Even our allies know that Joe Biden is a pushover and he prefers going along to getting along, even if it's not good for the American people.
See, I just don't get what our policy is. And I just thought that I'd be disagreeing with Joe Biden's foreign policy in many respects, but I wouldn't think there'd be a lack of there because they're supposed to do things traditionally. Here's our foreign policy. Here's where we stand on the greatest threats to face America. Here's what we want to do to unbind our enemies like Russia, China, and North Korea and Iran. There's no plan. Now we find out we have an outreached hand and we're begging China to start talking to us. And we are. We're talking to them. But then we hit them with a bunch of sanctions. We have not released any of the tariffs, which I'm fine with, but just pick a lane. So China's saying, what are we dealing with here? You know, so can you do both? I don't know. If it's your policy to hit them hard on trade, to hit them hard on unsavory practices economically, to push them back out of Venezuela, to threaten them to get out of Cuba, to enhance the defense capabilities of Japan and South Korea while also backing up Vietnam, clear enemies who look at China as a threat. If that's your policy, do it. But with the left fake and the right fake and the left fake and the middle fake, China, even though I don't sympathize with them, they just don't know if we're coming or going. Yesterday, the U.S. expanded Russia sanctions. You saw that. And now targeting chips sent to via China. Good. But why did you wait 8 months? The minute those chips, those dual-use chips started arriving to help out the drones that they're now replicating that Iran created and originally lent to them, now they're making their own. The minute those chips started showing up, hit them with sanctions. Instead, you wait for a G7 and make an announcement. By that time, they're going to find an end around, I thought. So we'll see. Lieutenant Colonel Dan Hampton coming up shortly. Josh Krasshauer could be coming up next. I'm not sure. We're also following the latest doings with President Trump visiting Capitol Hill. Just met with House members. They seem quite pleased. Steve Scalise and Speaker Johnson just met with the press. Next, he's going to meet with Senate. Next, really important, going to meet with 200 CEOs in a business roundtable. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you chose us. Keep it here.
politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
We just had a migrant shoot two police officers in New York City, not far from my district. So this is an insane policy of the Biden administration. I put country before party. So I'm a Democrat, but I worry about my country.
And that is Robert Holden, and he is a city council person, a Democrat, and he's always level-headed, to tell you the truth. Every time I hear about a Democrat in New York that says something that makes sense, it always comes back to him. I always say it's got to be Robert Holden. So he came out and he just cited how concerned he is about the number of terrorists and the number of illegals here. He thought about it. He said, look, we got between 60 and 80,000 illegals here. We give them food and we give them shelter, but we don't let them work, and we shouldn't let them work. It'll be more of an attraction. So they buzz around in their mopeds. They do some subcontracting with Uber Eats or some of these delivery services. They got nothing to do. So some of them just get to crime, and that's what we're witnessing. And some of them don't want to do anything because they're only here for crime. And they got a big syndicate. In some cases, they find a way to steal your wallet. They get it over to one of the boroughs where they can just easily get your ID, give it out again, headed around the world, and you're done. You're finished. You're through. Because they got cyber experts that are all with neck tattoos. But here's more from Robert Holden.
It's a huge issue. They can't work. So what are they going to do? They're going to try to get money any way they can. And many are from gangs in Venezuela. We know that the 19-year-old who shot two police officers was a gang member in Venezuela. And they're trained, by the way, to ride on scooters and to rob people. And they're also trained to shoot at police. That's exactly what he did, but he did it in New York City. And that's disturbing. So how many others? You know, he's bad enough. But then when you have terrorists coming through, like the eight that were just captured, my God, how many more are out there?
Look, there must have been great police work that picked up that Queens guy in Queens at 1:30 in the morning. But they found with him this guy. I mean, you see the picture today? He says, a man armed with a gun and other weapons was arrested following a traffic stop. The man was driving a Ford Explorer with obscured windows and a blacked-out license plate around 1:30 at 86th and Ditmars in East Elmhurst. That's a working succession of Queens, by the way. My grandmother lived there for 60 years. Officers patrolling the area pulled the man over because of the unclear license plate. And that's when they discovered the items in the car, according to the NYPD. That had a Glock, two axes, a transit vest, a NYPD uniform items, heavy body armor. This guy could have been killing people for hours. Think about this. About six Tajikistan people went into a Moscow theater and just started shooting people in an outdoor mall for hours. Now, they have terrible security. No doubt about it. They're unmotivated, probably underpaid, and we'd probably neutralize them quicker. But think about how much damage they can do with an automatic weapon, six or seven people coming from all different angles, especially in New York City where you have 10 people every 3 feet. And here's the last cut from this city council member, cut 25.
And just the sheer numbers, and I did speak to the ICE director in New York City, but sheer numbers, they really can't do a thorough job. They don't have enough officers to vet these people. And certainly this should be done before they come into our country. So let's get real about this. Let's protect our nation, our citizens, our families. Let's know who's coming in. Let us know exactly who's coming in, but they have to be thoroughly vetted before they cross the border.
And here's what bothered me most. They don't. They're told not to work with ICE. The NYPD is told not to work with ICE. Now they're trying to break that down. They're trying to breach it. Mayor Adams is trying to just get rid of that. But now they're trying to be able to increase communications. But why? Because they look at ICE as people that come down on people who are illegal, overstayed their visas. ICE will come in, especially if you're dangerous. They'll come in great numbers and they'll grab you out of there. Next thing you know, people like AOC, the rest of the squad, are saying these guys are racist. They're always throwing out Hispanic people and minorities. No, they're throwing out people here that are illegal. So they thought in these sanctuary cities where we got all these Tajikistan's people, citizens, they said, let's just stop them from communicating with ICE. So you pick up an illegal, you put them in jail for whatever they did. You don't contact ICE. They used to contact, ICE used to wait outside and said, you can give them to us now. We'll grab them because they need to be debriefed and find out where the other guys are, especially when you have another guy who looks as though he's up to no good, who's been captured in Queens, and he's armed to the teeth. How's he going to talk? These guys on ICE and women on ICE know how to interrogate at a rapid rate. They don't have to worry about issuing tickets and giving people directions. They know exactly what their job is. They're experts at it. Governor Ron DeSantis is also concerned about it. He knows Disney's a target. Any iconic American structures are target. Cut 30.
Biden's own DHS has acknowledged there were hundreds of people on the terror watch list. Sean, you can't have 10 million people come and not have potential terrorists come across the border, especially when we have people from the Middle East. So now we know without a shadow of a doubt that we have ISIS folks who've been identified and apprehended.
Yeah. And then I watch this and I'm wondering if it's not unrelated. I'm watching the unrest at the October 7th exhibit in downtown New York City, where they have all the horrific pictures and survivors there to tell the story right where you'd go to see where the World Trade Center once stood. And now we have protests, people saying Hitler was right, should have finished the job outside there. They were in Hamas headbands, Hamas regalia, chanting anti-Semitic phrases, throwing blood at the Brooklyn Museum, and then going, finding out who's serving on the Brooklyn Jewish Museum board, going to their houses and defiling and putting graffiti on their houses. Are these some of the riffraff that are coming through our southern border? Man, because in America, anti-Semitism is gone out. I mean, if you are anti-Semitic, I can't tell you. Nobody that I know would ever tolerate you in their circles. I don't care if you're with Christians or Muslims. It was done. If you told me 2 years ago anti-Semitism is on the rise in America on college campuses, I'd say, what year are we in? But this feels like 1930. And now we're beginning to accept it. It's not even headlines. Now what I think they're doing, too, is in New York, and I hope it's in your state, they're starting to look into the mask law. During the days of the KKK where they wore the hoods and burned down people's houses and burned people at the stake and hung them just because they were black, these horrible racist people, they decided to have an anti-mask law. So you got to show your face. Now with everyone wearing their pandemic masks, and we never needed to begin with, they're wearing them so you can't see their face. Now they're going to pass a rule, reinforce that rule, that says you better take it off. So if you're so proud of hating Jews, if you're so proud of hating America, so proud of hating Israel, let's see who you are. And I don't understand why people who are chanting Hitler was right, I want to wipe out the Jews, yelling on the subway, Zionists, your chances to get out is now, trying to intimidate you. You might probably have all seen the video, if not hunted down. They got to be hunted down. They got to be arrested and interrogated. Keep in mind, during the KKK days, if you were arrested wearing a mask, you got 15 days in jail. How about all these weak-kneed, skinny losers getting paid to protest? How would you like to send them to Rikers? How many would show up the next day to harass you when you're trying to get to the airport or you're trying to get to school or work or to go see a museum?
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
All right, my next guest is Lieutenant Colonel Dan Hampton. He flew 151 combat missions during his 20 years in the military, in the Air Force. The author of a brand new book, Vanishing Act, The Enduring Mystery Behind the Legendary Doolittle Raid Over Tokyo. So as we talk a lot about what's happened in World War II, it's certainly appropriate. He also served in the Iraq War, Kosovo conflict, and the first Gulf War, and also helping out now with Ukraine. Colonel Hampton, welcome back.
Hey, Brian, it's always good to talk to you. Thanks.
First off, what are your thoughts a week after D-Day as the world looked back at that day? Do you think there was a wake-up call to a lot of people who have forgotten how close we came to a Nazi world?
Well, I hope so. You know, as a lover of history and a student of it, there's always cycles, and I'm always amazed at how many people don't realize that most of this we've seen before, and we know how to fix it. It's just a matter of making it happen.
So we'll see what happens. Maybe just also a reminder, too, how slow we were to recognize it. I mean, can you imagine France being occupied by a Nazi country, by Germany, and we still weren't in the war? It took the bombing of Pearl Harbor for us to do, all right, we'll do the Pacific and we'll do Europe.
Yeah, and that's why the current, you know, situation with us and helping the Ukrainians, it's frustrating, but it doesn't really surprise me. I didn't expect, you know, much better from this administration.
Well, I mean, why? Do you don't think we should be active in Ukraine?
Oh, absolutely I do, but they've delayed and prognosticated and, you know, wasted a lot of time. And in the meantime, a lot of Ukrainians are dying. And it's got to stop. It's got to stop soon.
Well, I mean, we gave $65 billion to them about over a month ago, and I don't think $1 has shown up yet worth of weapons.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of them were pre-positioned in places in Eastern Europe. And I'm a loss to explain to my Ukrainian colleagues and counterparts as to why this is taking so long. Because to me and to you, it's black and white. It's clear. It's a struggle that has to be won.
So why don't you explain to people why I get these people saying, look, what would you do? I mean, Vladimir Putin's got all these NATO allies on his doorstep. He told America, don't get involved in Ukraine. They better not become a member of NATO. I don't like them pulling away from us. And we supported them anyway. They left him no choice. You hear these arguments.
Yeah, I've heard him, and for the life of me, I don't know. I mean, I understand why people are wary of Russia because they believe the myth. But the last 2 years of watching them flail in Ukraine should have dispelled that to everybody, right? I mean, it's almost as silly as the deployment of those three decrepit ships down to Cuba.
Right. Well, what did you see? Is that what you see in that? Because the Russians tried to send us a message because we assume because Joe Biden said, okay, in certain circumstances, you're allowed to use our weapons to hit Russia where they're bombing you from in their border, even though they invaded you. And because of that, Russia is trying to intimidate us 90 miles off the Florida coast, which your thought is they didn't send much. You're not impressed with what they sent?
Well, I have no idea how many ships set out. You know, three or four of them showed up. That's hardly a fleet. And given the Russians' problems with logistics and maintaining their weapon systems, you know, they don't worry me a bit. And nobody's talking about the fact that, you know, the Russians are using weapons from North Korea and China to hit Ukraine. So why do we care if the Ukrainians use our weapons to hit Russia? It's not like Russia's going to attack us or anything.
Well, I mean, we tried to tell China, remember we said don't. The president said don't, and they are. They're using dual-use weapons they're sending over. They're sending over chips for drones, and now we're going to start sanctioning them. Can you explain that?
No, I really can't. I mean, talk is cheap, right? You know that. I know that. It's like Putin and all of his red lines. Nobody believes him because you don't back up what you say. We've had administrations in the past that say, hey, don't do this. And when that happens, they do something about it. We don't have an administration that's doing that right now. So people don't feel like there's, you know, the Russians don't feel like there's any consequences for just ignoring it. Besides, an intelligence officer would tell you to listen to what you're not being told and look at what you're not being seen or shown. And the thing in Cuba is a case in point. I mean, that is an act of desperation, more or less, on Putin's part. And it's sort of laughable.
I know. I hope. But it does show a presence in our hemisphere that we're willing to tolerate. It does show a presence with the Russians, Iranians, and Chinese in Iran in Brazil and in Venezuela, which we suddenly are willing to tolerate. I want you to hear what Sabrina Singh says, who is the spokesperson at the Pentagon. Cut eight.
We've been tracking the Russians' plans for this. This is not a surprise. We've seen them do these type of port calls before, and these are, you know, routine naval visits that we've seen under different administrations. We're always constantly going to monitor any foreign vessels operating near U.S. territorial waters. We, of course, take it seriously, but these exercises don't pose a threat to the United States.
Well, it's a port call, so it's a chance for the sailors to stretch their legs in communist Cuba. So what do you think about the spin from the press secretary?
Well, I mean, I don't usually agree with what they have to say, but she's correct here. That's no threat to the United States. I mean, come on, one frigate, one submarine, and they always have to bring along a seagoing salvage ship to tow their ships when they break down. I mean, look at their sorry aircraft carrier, right? That thing can't go anywhere under its own power. So I'm not worried about that.
But they did try to send us a message, which bothers me. And number two is they don't want us to remember that the Ukrainians, without a navy, have basically blown up their navy in the Black Sea, leaving them with just a symbolic presence in Crimea.
Yep, you're right. And the Ukrainians, you know, are doing very well given the given the lack of assistance they're getting from us, they've got to have a couple things immediately, and that's long-range weapons. They need us to increase our weapons production to supply them. And we got to get this F-16 thing squared away.
What is the latest with the F-16 thing?
Well, they're going to get them, but, I mean, you know, they're not U.S. F-16s. They're NATO F-16s. And then there's the question of the pilots where people like me come into this. But, you know, I don't know if you know this, but there's a bill in the House. It's been in there for 2 years. It's 7039, and it's violating the Neutrality Act exemption for Americans, specifically pilots, that would go fly and fight for Ukraine. And it's been sitting in the House for 2 years. That's got to get passed, too, so we can go do this.
It's unbelievable. Here's what Doug Collins said about why Zelensky was invited to the G7, and I like that. But guess who wasn't? Listen, cut seven.
I would consider it a snub. Look, Vladimir Zelensky is showing up at everything from a local store opening in other countries to everything he can because he's desperate for money. He's desperate for resources. He's desperate to continue the fight that he's going on. I think what's really interesting about this agreement and taking Netanyahu out where they're talking about a ceasefire is why wouldn't there be some discussion there? Why would you not want someone there if you're trying to get a ceasefire in a Middle Eastern region that is a powder keg right now? It really just shows the priorities that they're willing to touch on the perimeters of things that they think that they can control, but they really don't want to get into the stickier situations such as the Israel-Gaza situation, which they just don't want to bring in to mess up their situation.
It is kind of odd. How could you not say have that front and center with the G7, the leadership right there, cut out the middlemen, the communications, the logistics issues? Why would you not want Netanyahu there, or at least a major secure call there?
Right. It's because it complicates the situation. And look, you know, the Gaza-Hamas thing is important, no doubt, but the fight, at least in my opinion, is with the Ukraine, because if Putin wins there, everybody's correct that says he's not going to stop. He's got to stop there. The Israel-Hamas war, as tragic as it is, doesn't really affect, you know, global security per se, and the Ukraine situation does.
Well, it does, but where are we at right now? They're trying desperately to hold on to Kharkiv. Have they thwarted the offensive yet? We also find out horrifically that the Ukrainian kids that they kidnapped are now being put up to random adoption under different names inside Russia. First off, what is happening with the actual fight?
Yeah, well, the Russians are barbarians, so that shouldn't surprise anyone. Putin is ramping up conscriptions. He's sending, you know, tens of thousands of people. He's banking on the fact that the United States, with its short attention span, will lose interest, stop sending money, and he can slowly bleed Ukraine until everybody's lost interest. I mean, look at what happened in the Crimea, what, a decade ago, right? Nobody did anything. That's why this was shocking to him, because all of a sudden everybody was interested in what was going on and fighting back when we didn't do it 10 years ago.
Right. Well, but we also didn't do much after Georgia either. Condoleezza Rice told Saskia Velli to just knock it off. And then we sent a presence there to make sure they didn't continue. But they basically took those provinces and now infiltrating into Georgia's elections. They're trying to play a role in putting their stooges into different places in that country. And if all the Baltic states got to be nervous, you can't blame them for being nervous about what could be happening next. Maybe not an invasion, but what they do is slowly try to take over elections, correct? There's different ways for them to do it.
You're exactly right. And you have to remember, you know, Russians are chess players and they play the long game. And they are geographically right there in the middle of it while we're thousands of miles away. So, again, they're banking on our disinterest, our, you know, lack of resolve with this to ultimately win.
And where do we stand right now? What role do you think America is playing now in the weapons we're giving them? Because I understand they are finding a way. The Russians right now have checkmate when it comes to the drone technology. They have found a way to ground the drones that we gave them, and we're looking to counter that. Do you know where we're at?
Well, I'll just tell you, without giving the, you know, everything away here, that has been a well-known problem and is being dealt with. Okay, what Ukraine really needs are long-range weapons to strike at airfields inside Russia like they did the other day with the drone, and they took out that Su-57, you know, fighter. That's what they really need to do, and they need precision-guided weapons from us, and they need air-to-air weapons for the F-16s. They need the F-16s to get in there, and then they need people to fly them, which, again, is where I come in.
Yeah, which is, by the way, have you been training people? They've been supposed to be trained now for almost a year.
Well, they're being trained in a couple countries in Europe and then here also. But, you know, that's just the first bunch. They need more, which is why they need foreign pilots to take part in this. You know, guys that already have a decade or two decades worth of experience to fly these things. But under U.S. law, the way it is now, I mean, it affects the Neutrality Act. And you know, we could get in all sorts of legal trouble by doing that, which is why that House bill has got to get itself out of committee and get passed.
What is that bill?
It's the volunteer participation in Ukraine Act. It's a House. It's H.R. 7039. Yeah, that's what it is. And it's in the Justice Subcommittee, I think, right now. But it's been there for 2 years, and it's allowing an exemption for Americans to fight for Ukraine, because right now, you know, you could lose your retirement pay, you could get prosecuted, you could go to federal prison if you don't do it right. And so this would allow an exemption to the Neutrality Act for Ukraine only. All right, those rules are in place for good reasons. You don't want people running around all over the world, you know, being mercenaries ad hoc. But this is different. This is Ukraine. And there's precedent for that. I mean, we've done it before. The Polish and Russian civil wars, the American volunteer group in China. I mean, you know, we've done it before, so it could be done, and it needs to be done.
I tell you what, I just think we need people like you to explain the conflict and take and J.D. Vance, who's a very smart guy, totally against everything you just said and everything I believe. And I even told him on the couch the other day, I said, you know, you got the Ivy League education, you served in the military, you won your first Senate race, the best-selling author, great family biography. I don't understand where your foreign policy came from. I just worry about it.
Yeah, I don't know either. I've got an Ivy League degree and served in the military, too, and I see things completely different than he does. And to me, again, I mean, I'm the last person to advocate becoming the world's policeman. And the wars that I fought in were, you could argue them, you know, either way. But this is different. This is a black and white conflict. And if you go back and look at Europe in the 1930s and the rise of Adolf Hitler, the parallels are almost spooky. Okay, and this guy's got to be stopped, or he won't stop here.
And here's the thing. I would also use that leverage to consistently put the pressure on France and change the German constitution. Say, you guys got to start amping up your defense. We know about your history, but we're going to give you the ability to build up your defense. Explain it to the German people how important it is to fight your own battles. We'll be there to back you up, fight with you, need be. But they got to be ready to defend themselves. And that would be help the message that you are sending to the American people, that France sees the danger. Spain sees the danger. Italy sees the danger. And Germany sees the danger. Wouldn't that be easier if we saw the urgency from them, even though they have stepped up through NATO? But I would love to see them also supporting verbally Ukraine and the worry about Russia aggression.
Well, I would, too. I mean, you'd think after two world wars and the Cold War that they'd get it. I'm sort of at a loss as to why they don't. France, you know, anything goes with them. They haven't won a major war since Napoleon was emperor, so I don't put much faith in France. But Germany is another thing altogether, and you're absolutely right about that.
I hear their special operators do have your respect, though. Your book, Vanishing Act, The Enduring Mystery Behind the Legendary Doolittle Raid Over Tokyo, which do we know?
Well, you know, it was a dark time in our history, and we needed to send a message. All right, everybody today knows about sending messages, and that's what the Doolittle Raid was. What this book is about the one plane out of the 16 that went to Russia, went to the Soviet Union, and why it did that. It was not an accident. It was all carefully planned, and I found out why, and that's what's in the book.
So you're unwinding a mystery.
Yeah, you know me. I like mysteries and setting historical inaccuracies straight when I can. And this is a fascinating story.
Lieutenant Colonel Dan Hampton, always great talking to you. Thank you so much, sir.
My pleasure, Brian. Take care.
You got it. We come back. What happened last night in Game 3 in Dallas? And also, take your calls. I see you up there in New York and in Dayton, Ohio. Of course, we just spoke to Bernie Moreno in a previous hour. He wants to be the next senator from Ohio. Don't move. Brian Kilmeade Show.
You're with Brian Kilmeade. Information you want, truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I thought it was a great team win. That lead dwindled fast. I know we were up 20, and then they stormed back. And that's what the beauty of basketball is. You can never let up. It's always time. And they were able to cut the lead. We've been in those moments a lot. We just needed to be patient, be poised. I feel like we got some good looks. The defensive intensity ramped up. Officiating, you know, got a little bit tighter. So at the end of the day, you just got to make plays.
Yeah, I was in Dallas yesterday, and the American Airlines Arena was just electric. They had all the stand-ups from the local news were there. People just gathered around. The game was hours away. It was game three, a pivotal game. The Mavs were down 0-2 to the Celtics, and they were up early, up by two, I think, at the end of the first quarter. I think up by one at the half. And then it was a magical third quarter for Boston. They were up 21 points early in the fourth. The Mavs came all the way back, and they would hold. But the Celtics would hold on for the victory, 106-99. I got bad news, guys, for Mavericks fans in Dallas. No one's ever in NBA history in any playoff has come back from a 3-0 deficit. Here's some of the fans talking about. By the way, you guys heard Jaylen Brown. But before the game, Maverick fans got a little. I guess, tough with Charles Barkley. Listen to this.
The guy with no championship rings. He sucked at basketball. Zero rings. He has zero rings. You're Jordan's son. Imagine not winning an NBA championship.
It was the guy that has no championship rings that just won. Yeah, he has no rings.
So that idiot fan trolling Charles Barkley didn't win a championship, but he happens to be one of the greatest players of all time. I have no tolerance for that. It'd be different if Charles Barkley walked out and started ripping people. You know, just say, hey, I don't like you. You're just a fan. I'm a player. I know he hasn't been perfect. But that's when fans are just idiots. You're not even in his class. Did you make the NBA? Are you playing against him in the league? If Jordan wants to rip him, if Shaq wants to get on him, I understand it. But he's already risen to heights in his career before he was 35. Then 99.9% of Americans walking on the earth today. You can't heckle him.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Ben Domenech, Fox News contributor and editor of the Transom.com daily newsletter. And I'm inviting you to join a conversation every week. It's the Ben Domenech Podcast.
Subscribe and listen now by going to FoxNewsPodcasts.com. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.